Before we do that, Paul Howard had a few remarks.
Council, I'd like to introduce a summer intern we have that's helping us with herring, Alan Lovewell. Alan, stand up. Alan comes from the West Coast. He's got he's working on his master's degree out in Monterey, and he brings a very unique left coast perspective, what he calls a gnarly perspective. So welcome, Alan.
Okay. Dr. Pierce?
Just a clarification. He's a West Coast guy, but he was born in Martha's Vineyard, so he's an island boy. And anyways, he's close to home.
Well, he's back on the right coast. Okay, I'll turn it over to Frank.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As always, herring is behind tab 5. Since we've last met, there's been quite a few meetings. I'm not going to go through them, but the SSC met, which we've been briefed on. The Enforcement Committee met to review a few things. We heard from Rodney yesterday, and the committee took those under consideration. The Herring Advisory Panel met on May 14th to review the measures. The PDT has met, and the Herring Committee had a two-day meeting at the beginning of this month. The plan for today, so everybody knows up front what we're trying to do. As soon as I'm finished here, Lori's going to give a presentation on the ACL AMs. After that, we'll have two committee motions. With any luck, that'll be prior to lunch. After that, Lori's going to have a presentation on the other elements that are Amendment 4, and then we have a committee motion, which I'm not going to get into at this time. And with that, if there's no questions, I'll turn it over to Lori.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to provide an overview of the ACL AM provisions that are proposed in Amendment 4. If you need to reference this section of the discussion document, it is Section 2.0, starting on page 5 of the larger Amendment 4 discussion document. And I'll also just note, I mean, I'm going to cover in my presentation all of the actions and recommendations from the committee. There are in the discussion document some comments that are in the margins that are just really for your own benefit, not necessarily things that need action today, but just comments from the PDT or myself regarding some of the elements of the process, and they're really just in there for informational purposes. Okay, Amendment 4 does propose to establish a process for annual catch limits and accountability measures. ACLs and AMs were identified by the council as the top priority for this amendment, and the committee's work on the range of alternatives in this amendment is generally complete. Amendment 4, the measures in Amendment 4 address the process for establishing ACLs and AMs. The amendment doesn't actually establish the ACLs or the numbers because that's done through the fishery specification process. So the focus of the measures and alternatives in the amendment is on the fishery specification process, and modifications to that process are proposed in the document to ensure consistency with the new Magnuson Act. As I mentioned, the overfishing limit, the ABC, and the ACLs themselves will be set through the specifications process. We have a three-year process for fishery specifications that we established in Amendment 1, and that will be the process that will be used to establish ACLs and possibly AMs or modify AMs in the future. AMs will be established in this amendment. There are a few options under consideration, but they can be modified in the future through the specifications process and other actions. The ACL alternatives are described in the discussion document on page 16. There are two general alternatives. Alternative one is no action, which means that we would not establish an ACL AM process in this amendment. And alternative two is to establish the process, and this would be done through changes to the fishery specifications. There are two options under consideration within alternative two to adjust the fishery specifications, which are described on page 19 of the document, and I will go through those in just a minute. The Herring Committee motion, which you will be considering shortly, is to adopt these alternatives for consideration, including both options for the fishery specifications. Now, as described in the document, in the amendment, some new terminology will be established to comply with the ACL-AM provisions in the Magnuson Act. First, the definition of catch will be the total quantity of fish taken in commercial, recreational, subsistence, tribal, and other fisheries. That's right out of the National Standard Guidelines. Catch will include all retained and discarded fish, and ACLs will represent total catch and must account for discards one way or the other. For the definition of stocks in a fishery, in this amendment, the stock in the fishery is Atlantic herring. It is the only stock that is managed under this fishery management plan. And the stocks in the fishery that we identify for the purposes of ACLs do require status determination criteria like overfishing definitions. The guidelines, the national standard guidelines, do not require that all target and non-target stocks be included as stocks in the fishery. That is at the council's discretion. And other stocks, the language in Amendment 4 allows other stocks to be included in the future if appropriate. So the general approach that we're taking in this amendment is to establish an ACL-AM process for Atlantic herring as the primary stock in this fishery. And then, of course, catch of non-target stocks can be addressed in this amendment through other mechanisms. The overfishing level is defined as the maximum fishing mortality rate times the current estimate of stock biomass. As Steve mentioned earlier, this can fluctuate above or below MSY depending on the stock size. The acceptable biological catch, the ABC, is defined as maximum catch recommended for harvest. This is a new definition of ABC for the Atlantic herring fishery. Right now, we have a specification of ABC in the herring plan, but it is allowable biological catch. That will go away. That ABC specification will no longer exist, and instead will have an ABC specification that is acceptable biological catch. This specification will address scientific uncertainty and will be recommended by the Council's Scientific and Statistical Committee. And, of course, the Council is bound by the SSC recommendations regarding ABC. The general equation that we're implementing in this plan is that the overfishing limit is greater than or equal to the ABC, which is greater than or equal to the ACL. As I mentioned, ABC will be specified based on scientific uncertainty. So there will be an ABC control rule applied. The definition of the ABC control rule is that it is a specified approach for setting the ABC as a function of scientific uncertainty. Just for herring committee members, I, after the committee meeting at the beginning of the month, I did add this placeholder in the definitions in the document because I guess it wasn't very clear that the ABC control rule would be specified after we went through the SSC process this year and got more guidance from the SSC on how to specify ABC. So there is now a placeholder in the document for an ABC control rule. The SSC advice on the 2009 track assessment and the 2010 to 2012 ABC specification will form the basis of the ABC control rule in Amendment 4. So we'll be getting that as we go through this process this year, and it will be adopted in this document as our starting point for an ABC control rule with language that indicates that the ABC control rule may be modified in the future through the specifications process, a framework adjustment, or an amendment. Another, just to go on with more terminology, the annual catch limit, ACL, is defined as the catch level selected for harvest. The specification of the ACL will consider management uncertainty. The ACL is the level of catch that is used to determine whether accountability measures are necessary. And what's proposed in Amendment 4 is that one stock complex, ACL, will be established for Atlantic herring. That ACL will equate to the optimum yield for the U.S. fishery. And then sub-ACLs will be established for each of the management areas. And those sub-ACLs equate to what we currently view as our total allowable catches in the various management areas. Canadian catch of Atlantic herring, state waters catch, and possibly discards will need to be accounted for when specifying ACLs. Those are all elements that may make up management uncertainty. And then accountability measures, of course, are defined as measures to ensure that the ACL will not be exceeded. Those are referred to as precautionary, although I'll probably change that terminology to proactive to be more consistent with other FMPs, and also measures to mitigate or correct any ACL overages that may occur, right now referred to as consequential, but again, that terminology will probably change to reactive. Just to give you an overview of the process, again, the measures in this amendment are process related. There will be one stock-wide ACL established, which will equate to our optimum yield. The management areas will be management area TACs will be sub-ACLs, which will be subject to accountability measures. As the process moves along, the herring PDT will develop recommendations for ABC and ACLs, and we will provide a discussion document to the SSC. The discussion document will include our recommendations regarding OFL for the next 3 years, an ABC recommendation, and related discussion regarding scientific uncertainty, an evaluation of whether ABC and the ACLs have been exceeded in earlier years, and the ACL discussion will address management uncertainty. The SSC will review the discussion document and, of course, the recommendations from the PDT, as well as all of the stock assessment information and really all of the information that we can provide the SSC. And the SSC will recommend ABC and will comment on other related issues as may be requested by this council. The PDT will provide recommendations regarding ACL and sub-ACL options and the discussion of management uncertainty. The SSC may comment on this if the council requests it. And the PDT will also evaluate accountability measures and provide recommendations to the council as appropriate. The council will be bound by the ABC recommendation from the SSC, but the council may consider different options for the sub-ACLs. The sub-ACLs will be evaluated by the herring PDT through the specifications process. This is, as an example, what we did over the last specs process was a risk analysis to look at different ways to divide the TACs by management area and evaluate the relative risk of exceeding some target exploitation rates for the various stock components. We may take that kind of an approach again this year. We may take a different kind of an approach, but the PDT will be doing an evaluation of the sub-ACLs and how they may be distributed by the management areas. Let me just move through this. This is a little tough to see. Hopefully you can see it on your handout. As I mentioned, there are two options for the fishery specifications, and as Steve mentioned in his presentation earlier, they all do sort of provide linkages to the new requirements of the Magnuson Act. We have quite a good amount of structure already in this FMP through our specifications process to sort of move into the new requirements of the Magnuson Act. So the first option is to essentially keep the same specifications that we have now with the change to ABC, as I mentioned, and with the change from TACs to ACLs. All of the other specifications would remain the same and would continue to be specified every 3 years through our package. The second option is to simplify the specifications a little bit and to get rid of, eliminate specifications for joint venture processing, internal waters processing, TALF, and the TAC reserve. The thinking behind this option is that you know, there really isn't a need to consider allocation for foreign fishing every time we do specifications, because we already determined in Amendment 1 that we have enough harvesting capacity in the U.S. fishery when we developed a limited access program for the U.S. fishery. So rather than go through the exercise of specifying TALF and JVP every time we do specifications, this option would simplify things and get rid of the need to do that through the specifications process. Just a summary on some of the issues related to scientific uncertainty. And again, you know, the PDT just started to outline some of these issues for the SSC when we met with them earlier. And the Amendment 4 discussion addresses, you know, some of these issues. There may be others, though, coming out of the next stock assessment or the one that just occurred. So the discussion in the Amendment 4 document will likely change to reflect you know, the SSC recommendations regarding scientific uncertainty as well as the new stock assessment. But what this really does is just give you a general outline of some of the issues we might be dealing with when we talk about scientific uncertainty. Again, it will be addressed primarily between the OFL and the ABC. The ABC may be set lower than the OFL to account for scientific uncertainty. The stock assessment will be the primary mechanism for identifying sources of scientific uncertainty. In the past, we've identified several sources of uncertainty, including the mixing of the herring stock components, the retrospective pattern in the stock assessment, and predator-prey relationships and forage issues. Regarding management uncertainty, the intent is to have management uncertainty addressed primarily between the ABC and the ACLs. The ACLs may be set lower than the ABC to account for management uncertainty. The level of management uncertainty will depend on the catch monitoring program and the ability to monitor all catch against the ACLs. Possible sources of management uncertainty may include bycatch or discards, Canadian catch, state waters catch, and the impact of ASMFC management measures on fishing patterns. Those are the ACL alternatives. In terms of the accountability measures, we have two alternatives under consideration for accountability measures. AM Alternative 1 is no action, which would maintain our current accountability measures, and AM Alternative 2 is to implement additional accountability measures. And these, under AM Alternative 2, the additional accountability measures would be established in addition to the existing accountability measures. So no matter what's done in this plan, the accountability measures that we have in place already are intended to stay in place. There are a couple of mix and match options for additional accountability measures that are described under Alternative 2. There were several options for accountability measures proposed during the development of the amendment, and two that are recommended by the committee for further consideration. And if you look in the discussion document on page 27, hopefully it's not really confusing, but what I've done is I've included in the discussion document all of the options that have been considered by the committee for additional accountability measures, and then I've struck through the ones that are not recommended for further consideration. So you can see some of the other options that have been discussed at the committee level. What the committee is recommending is two options under Alternative 2. One option would be for an overage payback provision, and the other option would be for an accountability measure for the haddock catch cap. So the motion that you'll be considering is to adopt Alternatives 1 and 2 with Options 3A and 4. And you can look in the discussion document. There, like I said, there were four options that were considered, and the committee is recommending that we move forward with Options 3A and 4. For Alternative 1, which is no action on accountability measures, we would maintain our current suite of accountability measures in this plan. And again, you know, we're in a pretty good position with this plan because we already had a lot of the structure in place to comply with the ACLAM provisions. We already have accountability measures in this plan to prevent our TACs from being exceeded. Under the no-action alternative, we would maintain the following measures. The in-season adjustment mechanism, which, is somewhat vague and isn't ideal, but there is that mechanism in the plan to allow the regional administrator to make in-season adjustments to the TACs. We already have a mechanism that closes the directed fishery in a management area when 95% of the TAC is projected to be reached. This actually could be called an ACT, an annual catch target. We're not calling that. We're not calling it that in this plan, but that's essentially what it is. We manage the fishery to 95% of the TAC, and actually it's 92% in the areas where we have a research set aside. That's when the directed fishery closes to prevent the TAC from being exceeded. We also have a framework adjustment process that would allow us to make additional adjustments or implement additional accountability measures within the three-year time frame for that specifications package. And we also have management measures that are implemented by the ASMFC, which we can't fully incorporate into our plan, but they are indirect accountability measures, and we should certainly recognize them, including days out of the fishery, which are intended to slow down the catch, particularly in Area 1A, as well as spawning restrictions. Alternative 2, as I mentioned, proposes at this point two options for additional accountability measures as recommended by the Herring Committee. The first option is for an overage payback provision. This is described as option 3A on page 32 of the discussion document. This would allow, or this would require, that an overage in one of the management area ACLs from one fishing year would be deducted in the year final, following the final tally. And this, Steve kind of touched on this earlier in his presentation. This does include, or it does require, a one-year lag time to actually get the final tally of the catch before the deduction can be made. As I mentioned, the directed fishery closes at 92% or 95%, and at that point, herring is only allowed to be taken incidentally under a 2,000-pound trip limit, and that can occur in all other fisheries. So in order to determine if an overage has occurred, we have to wait till we get VTR reports from all of the other fisheries, and we can tally up the incidental catch to determine if there's been an overage. And so that would occur in the following fishing year, and then if an overage was actually determined, it would be the next fishing year that the deduction would be taken. These overages are likely to be pretty small in this fishery because the directed fishery closes at a lower percentage of the ACL and the trip limit goes to 2,000 pounds. So the accountability measures that we have in place in this plan are likely to result in very small overages if the overages occur at all. The second option for an additional accountability measure is a haddock catch cap accountability measure. This is described as option 4 on page 33 of the discussion document. This is consistent with the haddock sub-ACL for the herring fishery that's being established in Amendment 16 to the groundfish plan. Amendment 16 is establishing the ACL, and the ACL is for the herring fishery. So to be consistent, the herring plan needs to establish the accountability measure to determine what happens if that ACL is exceeded. And what this accountability measure does is applies the current regulations for closure of the fishery when the catch cap is reached, with additional language recommended by the Herring Committee to allow herring vessels with multi-species permits to continue to retain haddock when they're on a multi-species trip. Just a clarification to the current regulations, because there are some herring vessels that have multi-species permits. Excuse me. Timing considerations on the ACLs and AMs. We're looking at a 2011 implementation because the stock is not overfished and overfishing is not occurring. My understanding, based on guidance from the service, is that to be effective by January 1, 2011, the ACL-AM provisions must be submitted no later than May 2010. We are getting ready to go into the specifications process for 2010 to 2012, starting pretty much now. And it's going to occupy most of our time for the rest of this summer and fall. The 2010 to 2012 specifications must address the ACLAM provisions for 2011 and 2012. But we also are required by law to have an ABC recommendation from the SSC for all three fishing years. So we just got the stock assessment, and we're going to need an ABC recommendation from the SSC for this specifications package. Just a little bit of background. I just threw a couple slides in at the end of this to give you an idea of where we are right now. This slide, which you probably can't see, lists the current fishery specifications. Hopefully you can see it better on the paper. This just gives you an idea of what our current specs are and the current TACs. Right now, our ABC value is 194,000, which is consistent with the MSY that came out of the 2006 stock assessment. These will change, of course, as we review the 2009 stock assessment and move forward with working with the SSC. In terms of the fishery, this is the performance of the fishery in 2008 under the current specifications. We caught 92.5% of the Area 1A TAC, and that was, again, with a closure at 92% and the incidental catch. So we haven't experienced an overage, or we didn't experience an overage in any of these TACs during the 2008 fishing year. In total, we caught 55.7% of the total allowable optimum yield, which would be our sort of stock-wide ACL when we move into this process. That's just a little bit of background, and that's it for the alternatives that are proposed in Amendment 4.
Frank?
Okay, I'll go right to the committee motions. First motion, that the council adopt for the range of ACL's alternatives and Amendment 4, ACL Alternative 1 and Alternative 2, and Option 1 and 2 for fishery specifications. That's a committee motion. That's on page 16, I believe, Laurie.
Committee motion. Discussion. No one on the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? Everyone understand? Okay. All those in favor, raise your hand. Six in favor. Opposed? One. Abstentions? None. Motion carries 16-1. Frank?
Okay. Next motion, that the council adopt AM Alternatives 1 and 2 for consideration and Amendment 4 for accountability measures. Alternative 2, the council should adopt Option 3A and 4 as modified by the committee and reflected in the Amendment 4 decision document. And that's on page 32, Lori. I think it starts on 27 and goes to 32.
Okay. Committee motion, discussion. Paul Howard.
Laurie, on the way you've described the accountability measure alternative one in the document, I was under the impression that a framework adjustment process is not an AM because it doesn't happen automatically, and that wouldn't be a AM at all. And the ASMFC measures, an AM is either in season that prevents you from going over your or it's in season, and it prevents you from going over your ACL, or it's after the fact and is a payback if you go over the ACL. So I don't see ASMFC measures, which are, you know, you can land twice, preventing you from exceeding an ACL. It's just that's part of the management process. So I don't see that there are a lot of alternatives in there for AMs, if those two are in fact not AMs, and I don't know who decides whether it's a AM or not.
Yeah, as a follow-up to that, in fact, I think that, or I don't think that three of the four measures identified as existing AMs are in fact consistent with the guidance. The in-season adjustment is not an AM. The framework provisions are not AMs, and the additional measures that ASMFC imposes are not AMs. So I think that's just a drafting issue with the document, because it's just a description of the existing accountability measures. With respect to the committee motion, I'm concerned that there's really only one alternative for addressing a herring overage or a herring landings exceeding the ACL, and would like to hear exactly why the committee decided not to include, for example, option one, which is when you know you're at 100% of the ACL, you close the fishery. It only makes sense that if you're know you're going to exceed it, that you take some action to avoid doing that or to minimize the impact of doing that. And then option two, which is lowering the trigger for closing the directed fishery in the following year, the advantage of that kind of measure is you are addressing the reason why you exceeded the ACL to begin with, whereas an overage deduction doesn't do that. So I would argue, at least for the purposes of public hearing, that we should be including at least those two options.
Anyone else in the council? Doug?
I guess with respect to Pat's comment on the ASMSC measures, there's more than just days out of the fishery within our current management plan. Addendum 1 allows us to set days out of the fishery. It also has seasonal quotas that will be set, will trigger a closure of the fishery, or closure of landings, I should say, within our three states at either 95%, or we also have an option for 90% in there. So I guess, at least my personal opinion, is that these are, in the current form, some form of accountability measures that at least should be recognized in the plan, as opposed, I realize it's not something the council has anything over, but it should be recognized in the plan.
Yeah, I think I can understand your point of view, Doug, but we can't rely on, nor do we have any control over what the ASMFC does. And I think if I read this motion right and apply it to the document, we're essentially saying the only way we're going to deal with overages is not the next year, but the year after that. I think that's the only, if we approve this and go out to the public with it, that's what we're telling them, right? That if we have an overage, which we just said we haven't had this past year, we underperformed against our area tax. But if we do have an overage, it's going to take 2 years to catch up to it, right? I guess I'm looking at Lori or Frank to confirm. Is that an accurate portrayal of what will be in the document if this motion passes?
In terms of overage payback, yeah.
Okay. All right, Beth?
Yeah, I think that we have a fairly good handle on the directed fishery landings through the IBRs. The incidental catch, which is the 5% that's accounted for, we don't really have those numbers until well into the year, like in other plans. So the PDT is not going to have their total catch figures until probably May at the earliest. So that was some of the thinking and discussion that went on at the committee meeting. As far as option one, I personally wouldn't mind seeing it in the document for public hearing purposes. I don't have any issues with that. Option two seemed redundant to the payback. I mean, if you go over by 500 metric ton, you could, under option two, calculate what percentage that was and apply it to closing the fishery earlier in the following year, or you could just deduct the 500 ton. It seems either way you get there. So I think that we were thinking perhaps it was just some redundancy between option two and option three. But the PDT had comments on option one, which I think is why in the committee motion it was excluded, but I don't know. You could put it back in.
So we're not – are we going to have a trigger? There's no trigger moving forward in a particular area for the directed fishery? Yeah, it's really low, though. So that, like you said in your presentation, existing rules are still in play. These are additional.
That's right. Oh, there we go. Yeah, under alternative two is everything that's in existence now plus additional measures.
Have we ever, have you done a retrospective analysis to see if the incidental catch has ever consumed the 5% that you set aside?
We haven't looked at it specifically. However, if you go back and look at the performance of the fishery against the TACs, in the years that we've had overages, they have been due to things like we had a reporting problem in Area 1B once and some issues with the management area boundaries, which we addressed in Amendment 1. None of the overages that we've had have been because of incidental catch. And like the graphic or the table showed for last year, the Area 1A TAC, we reached 92.5% of it. So we closed when we projected 92%, and the incidental catch made up less than 1%.
So past performance has shown that having the buffer in has worked pretty well at controlling the directed fishery, with the exception of failure to report or misreporting. So those would be the situations in recent time that would, in a sense, catch up and trigger an AM if the performance of last year or the year before is what we see into the future.
Yes, and that's what leads us to believe that any overages that we experience in the future are likely to be very, very small.
Did the committee, I assume the committee had a discussion about, I understand the data lag issue, but at what point does that data become available? Is it midway through the fishing year? Or?
Well, in order to evaluate incidental catch, we have to look at all fisheries. It goes, you know, beyond the herring fishery, and the herring fishery, of course, will be subject to the catch monitoring program, and the directed fishery will close at 92% or 95%. Incidental catch has to be evaluated through vessel trip reports. Because it's incidental catch in all fisheries where herring may be retained. VTR data lag about 3 to 4 months. We did talk about this, and we expect to have final tallies around April or May of the next fishing year. NIMFS has run into trouble in the past making adjustments to quotas in the middle of fishing years. And I think there was actually a court case on maybe Fluke that related to adjusting the quota in the middle of the fishing year. So to sort of avoid that problem, the idea would be to tally it by April or May and deduct it off the following fishing year.
But there is an option to have a reserve in place, and the reserve could be released minus any overages that following fishing year, right? That would be an alternative.
You mean to deduct it off of the reserve?
Right.
If we stayed with the current specifications process, I suppose we could try something like that. The reserve has not been, we've never, We've never specified or utilized a reserve. There's just a mechanism to allow it. Actually, I think we have specified it, but we've never utilized the reserve before. And actually, we're proposing to get rid of it because it really kind of amounted to paper fish more than anything. I'm not sure how that would work in terms of overages because, again, we're talking about potentially very small amounts. The amount of an overage in this case due to incidental catch at a 2,000-pound trip limit would likely be less than a day's worth of fishing.
Dave Gable.
Yeah. I mean, I think your principal measure here is closing the fishery when you hit the 92% or 95%. This whole incidental catch thing is a giant boogeyman. I mean, you're talking about boats that are in other fisheries, let's say groundfish with gill nets that might catch three boxes of herring once in a while. You're talking about the whiting fishery where it's now limited to a 2,000-pound trip limit, but also uses a mesh that hardly retains, you know, even if the herring are real thick, might only retain 4,000 pounds. And it's a fishery that has seasons on it. It closes November 15th. So there's no way to target herring. The only way bottom trawl fishermen can target herring is through the whiting fishery. If the whiting fishery isn't open, you can't just go out there and tow for herring. There is no directed bottom trawl fishery for herring. And there's an area off of Maine that's open. I can't remember when that closes. And there's an area off of Massachusetts down in Cape Cod Bay that closes, I think, in December. But the point is this is shown over and over. I mean, you're talking 0.5%, 0.2%. It's the numbers are minor, and I don't think you're ever going to exceed the ACL if you close at 92 or 95% of the directed fishery. At this time anyway, I can't conceive of how you could do it. So I think there's an awful lot being made over something that really isn't very important.
I think to clarify my line of questioning, Dave, that's the point I was trying to make, was that we're saying we're going to delay deductions of overages for an additional year to account for what you're describing as minuscule, possibly minuscule overages. So I'm just trying to get at why the committee didn't say, well, let's just take it off the following year. And I'm hearing from staff that the committee and the PDT are concerned about tallying what you're describing as minuscule catches. So I'm just trying to understand why we don't do it the next year.
Right. And I think if we do want to address an issue, the issue is, you know, misreporting or underreporting in the fishery earlier in the year, late reporting, whatever you want to call it. Now, if we need measures to ensure timely reporting, that's a very different thing. I think those measures already exist as well. I mean, there's a penalty structure for not reporting. You have to call the IVR system weekly. You have to file your trip reports monthly. If there's issues there, let's try and figure out how to deal with those issues. And that's more, I think, an enforcement question.
Well, I think it also has to do with the next year's TAC. You know, a significant misreporting situation may impact what should be available the following year.
Right, but if people are going to intentionally misreport somehow thinking they're getting away with something this year, they're not, because they're going to pay for it next year. They're probably more than pay for it. I guess the difference is instead of them as an individual paying for it, the fishery collectively pays for it. And if the fines for late reporting exceed the value of the fish captured, I suspect that misreporting will end rapidly.
Jim Otlin.
Yeah, we went through this with the committee, and the fishing year ends December 31st. Well, there's no way to know, and the specifications come out about a month or 2 months before December 31st. So there's no way to know if you overran a little bit until May, when all the tally's done. So you're talking about making the adjustment in the following fishing year, which is not 2 years late, it's 1 year. It's the following fishing year. You find out that December 31st, you your year ends December 31st. You find out in May that you had an overrun, and you deduct it the next fishing year, which is the specs will go out in probably October. So it's not 2 years, it's 1 year. And there's, we were following the recommendation that we can't make an adjustment after the specs have gone out. So that's how the timeline works. It's 1 year later, not 2 years.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, David and Jim made the points I was going to make relative to the logic behind the committee's recommendation on this issue. And at the same time, there was a recognition by the committee that with sea herring, there's a rather unique situation in that we have the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, the sea herring section specifically, very intimately involved in the control of landings of sea herring, notably Area 1A, where the section of three states, principally Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, meet, you know, with NIMS officials present, ASMFC staff present, to make some very important decisions regarding the numbers of days that are allowed for fishing. And they're very reduced, and monitoring is very significant. And the National Marine Fisheries Service has been right up front, very aggressive with its approach for monitoring the amount of landings that occur in a timely basis. We've worked closely with your office, Pat, on this issue, and the cooperation has been great. And it's gotten us to the point where we really feel, the ASMFC, the state specifically, we really feel that, you know, we know what's going on, notwithstanding, of course, the lawbreakers. But still, it's a unique situation created by this very significant cooperation between ASMFC, the National Marine Fisheries Service, relative to monitoring and slowing down landings to keep us within, you know, the quotas, 1A specifically. So that provided us with the confidence that we could go with the options that have been presented here today for, you know, the Council's consideration.
Additional rationale from the committee perspective was that any lag in the accounting would be most not likely due to the directed fishery. It might be from one of the other fisheries, and we would need that time to look at the other fisheries and work with the council to look at bycatch reduction measures. The 92% trigger is a strong measure. Collaboratively with the ASMSC process, the committee, and I personally don't feel we're going to exceed this. To Jim's point about specs, I mean, we do set the specs every 3 years. If we make a mistake and there's an overage or there's a bandit out there, we can account for it. But the unknown issue is the incidental catch. And we just, until we ramp up our monitoring program, aren't going to be able to answer that question.
Mary Beth.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add one thing to some of the thoughts that have been expressed. I mean, the industry would like to start a daily reporting system so that we really would even fine-tune it a little bit more, given the low TAC in Area 1A. So I think we'll probably be moving forward with those kinds of measures, and we'll have a better understanding of the catch in a more timely fashion. But it doesn't address the incidental catch.
Anyone else? Lori.
Just a question on alternative one in the description of existing accountability measures. I mean, I when I constructed this discussion under alternative one, I tried to take credit for all of the management measures that we have in place in the various management plans that affect the catch in this fishery and the distribution of fishing effort, regardless of whether or not the National Standard Guidelines officially refer to them as accountability measures or officially count them as accountability measures. Is it my understanding now that for moving forward with this document, all of the discussion of the framework adjustment process, the in-season adjustments, and the acknowledgement of the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission measures should be stricken from this discussion under this alternative?
Yeah, I think it's a question of where they come in the document. So, yes, you know, it's perfectly reasonable to include a discussion of them. It just can't be under the option that identifies accountability measures.
I think, I mean, I was pushing a little bit on that one just because I wanted to understand the rationale for the decision. I think from my perspective, we start with a standard of, if possible, kick the AM in the following year, but with good reason and experience, which I think I heard out of the council, the committee members today, there's a strong reason and a track record why waiting an additional setting of the spec or the following year, as Jim points out, makes sense. So on the issues of ASMFC and the likely overage occurring from the incidental, if at all, that could be rationale to support this alternative. So whether you call it a specific AM or you use it as reasoning in defense of a decision you make, you know, I think that's another way to use it. Dr. Pierce.
Well, but I understand Pat's perspective, but I still say that the language that is in the document relative to alternative one being an accountability measure is appropriate. We can add in other perspectives, other sorts of accountability measures that aren't necessarily described in the National Standard Number 1 guidelines. And there are guidelines, and we can go beyond there, and we can be adaptive and flexible relative to this issue, especially, again, in the context of sea herring. But once again, we have a very special circumstance where the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission enables this council to manage herring Area 1A specifically in a meaningful way, responsible way, in cooperation with the fishing industry itself. And this would not happen without the involvement of ASMFC. We would have a TAC for Area 1A, and then how would the council work with that? There would be no days at sea restrictions. The quota would be caught like this, and then the fishery would shut down, and there'd be no lobster bait, and there would be chaos in the lobster industry, and the sea herring industry itself would, I'm sure, suffer dramatically, perhaps would collapse. So, again, ASMFC provides the underpinning for, you know, successful management of Area 1A in particular. So that's why I feel strongly that that the language that's in this document as it stands right now for the first option is appropriate.
All right, Sally.
I think one thing that I think is missing from this discussion is that the fishery is essentially managed as under total allowable landings rather than total allowable catch at this point. And with ramped up monitoring, that certainly will change. And with the application of ACLs and AMs, that will change too. We're just at the very beginning of this discussion, and if the council is going to be entertaining the recommendations of the committee to not do monitoring, comprehensive monitoring in this amendment, then it becomes, I think, all the more imperative that there's a broader range of alternatives for accountability measures in the document. And it also gives some more breathing room if the council decides to do that, to have a wider range of alternatives of accountability measures, if in fact that's all we're going to be doing in Amendment 4. So with that, I would offer a motion to amend to include alternative, in Alternative 2, Option 1. So that's just additive to the motion that is up there to also include Alternative 2, Option 1.
Motion to amend made by Sally, seconded by Pat Kirkel. Discussion on the motion to amend. Doug Grout.
So the intent of this motion is that if these bycatches are occurring in other fisheries that are not under the directed fishery, that they would all end up being discards.
All
I would have to, I will not support this motion.
Anyone else on the motion to amend? Pat Kirkle.
Well, you know, if it's in fact true that we're going to consistently be dealing with the small kind of overages that we have been historically dealing with, then certainly this shouldn't be an issue. And if those overages are largely as a result of the incidental fishery, then we may not have the information to project a closure anyway. To me, what this says is, though, that if you know, in fact, that something has changed in the fishery, and that now you're in a situation where we are exceeding the TAC, where we've gone over 100% of the ACL, that you have a mechanism to address that. And as I said before, it just doesn't make sense to me that if you know, in fact, you're going over 100%, that you wouldn't take some sort of action in season to try to mitigate the impact of that on the next year's fishery.
Anyone else on the motion to amend? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Nine. Opposed? Seven. Abstentions? One abstention. Motion carries 9-7, one abstention on the motion to amend. It's now the main motion as amended. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Sixteen. Opposed? One. Abstentions? None. Motion as amended carries 16-1. Frank?
Okay. I'm not sure. Laura, are you ready to move into the presentation on the other elements? Okay.
Okay. That went a lot faster than I expected. But I thought we'd probably get to this after lunch, but we can go ahead and start going through this. I'm going to go ahead and just summarize the committee's work and progress on all of the other elements of Amendment 4 now that we've sort of wrapped up the range of alternatives for the ACLs and AMs. I just want to note as I go through this, I'm going to refer to various sections of the discussion document. What I've done with the discussion document is I've tried to keep as much of the document intact because it has sort of changed over time as the committee's worked on the alternatives. But I wanted to I used the comment feature and strikeout and things like that rather than just taking things out of the document so that everybody on the council can at least see the work that's been done and the progress that's been made on various sections of the document because quite a bit of work has been done. And I just wanted to let everybody kind of see what the committee's been working on. Once we get through this meeting and whenever we do move forward with the rest of the elements of this amendment, I'll be cleaning the document up considerably and dropping a lot of the stuff out that you see in there as strike through and things like that. So, there are five issues that have been identified for Amendment 4, and if you recall, in February, at the February Council meeting, we had a discussion about prioritizing the work in the amendment, and this list on this slide is the prioritized order of issues that the Council approved in February. Top priority is ACLs and AMs. Second priority is the catch monitoring program for the herring fishery. Third priority, management measures to address river herring bycatch. Fourth, groundfish criteria for midwater trawl access to groundfish closed areas. And fifth, measures to address interactions with the mackerel fishery. So I'm going to just go through each of these issues and give you an update as to where we are with the development of the range of alternatives to address these issues. Just a quick overview of the timeline. You know, it seems like forever, but we've only been working on this amendment for a year. Scoping occurred from April to June of last year. I know a lot of times people refer to, you know, us having worked on this amendment for 3 years now. It's 4 years. It's only been a year. We did finish scoping in June of 2008, and the committee began work on the development of alternatives. The committee did some work from June to October, and then we brought it to the council in October to give you a progress update. In November, the council identified an additional issue for the amendment, which was the groundfish closed area access. So that was added in November. We requested stakeholder proposals on the catch monitoring program in December of 2008. We received quite a few proposals. The committee reviewed those proposals and worked on the ACLs and AMs from December of 2008 to February of 2009. And we brought it back to the council in February of 2009. The council approved a few of those proposals to move forward. And provided some additional guidance and prioritized the workload in February. And since then, for the last 3 or 4 months, the committee's been working on the alternatives. In terms of the catch monitoring alternatives, the goals and objectives for the catch monitoring program were approved by the committee in December and approved by the council in February of 2009. Right now, there are three alternatives under development. There were four, but the committee did eliminate one at the last meeting in June. It's still in the document, but it's noted that it's been recommended for elimination. And then in addition to the three alternatives, there are a suite of management measures that can apply to any of the alternatives and several options under each of those measures. Those include measures to improve quota monitoring, enforcement, and compliance, measures to address transfers at sea, measures to address trip declarations and notification requirements, and measures to address at-sea monitoring. And I'll go through each of those in detail. The first, and these are all the measures that can be sort of mixed and matched or incorporated into any of the larger catch monitoring alternatives. First is measures to improve quota monitoring, reporting, and compliance. This is on page 37 of the discussion document. There are options under consideration to establish new regulatory definitions for transfer at sea. And also a new carrier dealer permit. This is just to clarify activities of carrier vessels and to make it clear what reporting requirements carriers are subject to. There are also options to modify the current IVR reporting system, including going to trip-by-trip IVR reporting instead of weekly, linking the IVRs to the VTRs to improve data consistency, and options to incorporate more vessels into the current IVR system. There are options for weekly VTR reporting instead of monthly, options to eliminate the VMS power down provision. There is an option that the Herring Committee just approved in June that would require catch reporting through VMS on a daily basis. And there are recommendations for outreach programs to improve compliance and to clarify some of the reporting requirements because they are quite complicated. The range of alternatives proposed in this section of the document appears to be complete at this time. The committee's work is done on this section. So that's good. The next section is on page 45, measures to address transfer of herring at sea. There are a few mix and match options under consideration. One option would restrict the transfer at sea to Category A and B vessels only. One option would prohibit the transfer of herring to non-permitted vessels. And another option would establish transfer provisions for open access Category D vessels. carrier vessels with letters of authorization would be exempt from the transfer restrictions for obvious reasons. And the range of options proposed in this section appears to be complete at this time. Measures to address trip declarations and notifications, and this is on page 47. There are two options under consideration which would modify and extend the pre-trip call-in requirement to all limited access herring vessels on any trip that may harvest, possess, or land herring. And another option which would also extend the pre-landing notification requirement to all limited access vessels. This really is, these measures are being considered to sort of assist in whatever catch monitoring program is developed. The first option would require all limited vessel access vessels to call in before they go out to request an observer, and really helps to helps the observer program to deploy observers in a more efficient manner and ensure that the whole fishery is covered. The second one is a pre-landing notification requirement through VMS, which would assist in the deployment of dockside samplers upon landing. Right now, these are required under the Framework 42 provisions for the haddock catch cap, but the options proposed in the document would extend this requirement across all of the limited access vessels in the fishery. The range of options proposed in this section appears to be complete at this time. Measures to address at-sea monitoring. This starts on page 55 of the document, and this has been a subject of relatively extensive discussion at the committee level. There have been a lot of management measures considered to improve at-sea monitoring and the collection of data through at-sea observers. And the Enforcement Committee did review these measures at the May 8th Enforcement Committee meeting. They reported out to the committee, and the committee discussed these measures in great detail at the last committee meeting. The first measure would require that the observer be provided with a safe sampling station. The recommendation is really that, you know, this measure should apply across all fisheries, not just the herring fishery. To provide reasonable assistance to observers in obtaining their samples. Again, the committee agreed that this is really something that should apply to all fisheries. The next one is to provide accurate details to the observer as to why a bag may be partially pumped and fish released. And I should note, these are all options under consideration, and again, they can sort of be mixed and matched. So there are various options under consideration that may be addressing the same issue. But these are all options that are in the document at this time. Provide notice to the observer when pumping may be starting and ending. This last bullet, the committee just added in June. When observers are on trips involving more than one vessel, require observers on any vessel taking on fish where and when possible. That would include pair trawl operations as well as vessels carrier operations. Additional measures to address at-sea monitoring require additional communication between pair trawlers if fish are being pumped to both vessels. Again, because these are mix and match, you know, some of them might seem a little bit inconsistent with others, but that would all be sorted out when the final measures are selected. Require a flow scale on processing vessels. We don't really have any in the fishery right now. Require that all fish must be pumped aboard the boat so that the entire catch can be sampled by an observer. This is actually the recommendation that the council made in April regarding closed area 1 and access to closed area 1 by herring vessels. The motion by the herring committee at the June meeting was tabled, and we never got back to it. So it's not clear right now whether or not the committee supports inclusion of this option. It's in the document right now, and the motion was tabled. The committee in June, at the June meeting, did add another measure to require that observers be allowed to view the cod end after pumping has ended. So as I've noted here, I mean, some of the measures proposed in this section do require some further discussion and development. I wouldn't say this section is entirely complete at this time because the committee did add some measures to this document at the last meeting, and we haven't really had a chance to evaluate them in any detail. The committee also added a couple additional measures. They're listed on page 58. Which may fit into the measures to address at-sea monitoring, or they may fit into other sections of the document. These were just added, so I kind of threw them in the document so you know they were in there. But we haven't really sorted out where all of this stuff will eventually end up in the document. One of them is a measure that would require the herring PDT to determine and apply a minimum portion of a slipped catch that would be required to be pumped on board a vessel to ensure complete sampling. And another one would be to require that vessel operators complete an affidavit providing details on slippage events. Every time the slippage event occurs, and the affidavit would be accompanied by photographs when an observer is on board. This was a recommendation from the Enforcement Committee that the Herring Committee adopted for further consideration. And just last note on that slide, you know, I haven't had a chance to really discuss those measures in any detail with the PDT or anything else, so I'm not sure if they're really ready to move forward at this point or not. In terms of the catch monitoring, there's some discussion in the document on page 49 about the sampling design for the observer program. This is something that we've already discussed with the council, and the council did make some recommendations. So the sampling design for observers that's proposed in the document would be based largely on the SBRM methodology, with some additional priorities identified for sea sampling. And those were determined by the council. The sampling design would be intended to achieve a 30% CV on bycatch estimates for stocks of concern that are not overfished, herring and haddock, and a 20% CV on the other stock of concern, which is river herring. So having said all of that, those are all sort of broader catch monitoring issues and measures that can sort of be mixed and matched and incorporated into whatever the larger alternative may be for catch monitoring. There are three under consideration right now, and just to go through them very briefly, they're all described in as much detail as we can provide right now in the document. Alternative one would include measures to ensure maximized retention, measures to standardize and certify volumetric measurements of catch, a dockside sampling program and possibly a dockside sampling set-aside, measures to require electronic reporting, and then, of course, the measures that can apply to any alternative, as well as a video-based electronic monitoring pilot program. Alternative one is not fully developed at this point. In fact, the committee really hasn't spent any time discussing the details of alternative one. There are several outstanding issues and questions that the committee needs to revisit. One of them, in this alternative, the maximized retention provisions are not clear. There are a host of outstanding questions related to maximized retention and how it would be administered. How it would be enforced, what would happen to, you know, unwanted and unmarketable fish, who would be responsible for disposal, how all of that would occur. Those details are still, have not been decided by the committee. There is some background information that's been provided on how we would certify volumetric estimates of catch, but there are still some details left to be determined on that measure. The dockside sampling program in Alternative 1 is pretty well developed. It's based on the current portside sampling program from Maine DMR and Mass DMF, and all of the sampling methodology is provided, all the protocols are provided in the document. But the committee has not yet reviewed the dockside sampling program, and the funding source is entirely unclear. It hasn't really been determined how the dockside sampling program would be funded. The feasibility of electronic reporting is not entirely clear at this time either. We received a presentation on the study fleet technology at the last committee meeting and what the status of electronic reporting is. I'd say it's definitely a work in progress, and there's been a lot of work done on it. It has not yet been tested on herring vessels. We're hopeful that the testing will occur this summer, but we're also that testing kind of needs to occur before we know whether or not we can adopt it in this amendment. And also, it's not clear what kind of administrative support at the regional office or at the service that there is for incorporating electronic monitoring into the plan and requiring it for the entire fishery. Alternative 2 includes the goals and objectives that were, developed by the committee and approved by the council. It intends to implement as close to 100% catch weighing or certification as practicable through the calibration of fish holds, which is described in Alternative 1. Measures to encourage the use of new technology. This alternative includes a provision that would use the study fleet and electronic reporting program would apply that through the research set aside, sort of as a pilot program, but do the work that needs to be done on the study fleet and the electronic reporting through the current research set aside process. This alternative also includes measures to achieve 20% CV for bycatch estimates. Through observer coverage as specified in the SBRM, as well as a dockside sampling program, and measures to improve at-sea monitoring and enhancing protocols for estimating slipped catch. Alternative 2, not really fully ready either. The committee has not spent really much time at all discussing Alternative 2, and there are some additional outstanding issues that need to be resolved. It's actually a pretty straightforward alternative. I can read it and get a good sense of what the alternative is intended to do and what the measures may be. It just hasn't really been discussed by the committee. The background information on calibrating the fish holds and the dockside sampling program are both provided in Alternative 1, but as I said, we just haven't really gotten to it at the committee level yet. The big question for me with Alternative 2 is that the alternative puts the onus on NIMS to implement and administer SBRM observer coverage levels and a dockside sampling program to obtain the 20% CV for bycatch estimates that we need in order to be able to accurately estimate bycatch. The feasibility of requiring all of that to come from the service and the support for that administratively and resource-wise, money-wise, is not clear. And we haven't really gotten much – we haven't had a chance to really discuss that. Alternative 3 includes measures to require maximized retention with video-based electronic monitoring for the fleet. There are options within the alternative for slippage caps, options to deal with species that may be prohibited for landing, and also options for phasing in the approaches that are outlined in this alternative. This alternative requires catch monitoring and control plans that would be developed by the industry and approved by the council and NIMS. It sort of provides the industry with an opportunity to develop an individual kind of program to demonstrate how that particular fishing operation will comply with the maximized retention and video-based electronic monitoring provisions in the plan. There are measures to target 100% dockside monitoring through independently verified landings, including measures to verify weight and certify volumetric proxies. And there are a suite of additional options that were proposed and adopted for further consideration at the June committee meeting. So we haven't really had too much opportunity to discuss the additional options in detail, but they were incorporated into this alternative in June. In terms of alternative three, I would say it's definitely the most developed and most detailed alternative that we have on the table at this point, although there are still some outstanding issues and questions. The maximized retention provisions, although more clear in this alternative than in alternative one, there are still some unresolved issues, including things like disposal of unwanted catch and responsibility for that and things like that. Those details are still to be determined. As I mentioned, the committee adopted some additional options that were proposed, and they are reflected in the June 1st, 2009 choir letter. They have not yet been incorporated into the document. The letter is in your binder, but there are additional options proposed for maximized retention, utilization of vessel electronics, and measures to require the catch monitoring and control plans. Those need to be incorporated into the document and discussed further by the committee. The details of the requirements of the catch monitoring and control plans need to be clarified. And the funding approach for this alternative needs more discussion. I would say that the funding approach for all of the alternatives needs more discussion. So at this point, with the catch monitoring, there's been a lot of work done. There's still a lot of work to do. It's way more complicated than most people think. And until you get into some of these issues at the committee level, you don't realize some of the complexities that need to be addressed. There are many measures on the table at this time, and there are probably other ways to combine them. Right now we have these three sort of overarching alternatives plus a whole bunch of other measures that could be mixed and matched. It's likely that the alternatives are going to change significantly during the further development of them at the committee level, and the committee acknowledges that the alternatives may change significantly through further discussion and development, specifically alternatives one and two, which just have not been vetted in great detail at the committee level at this point. And as I mentioned, the committee has not yet discussed costs and funding issues. Cost analysis is a work in progress, and certainly it's something that the PDT is working on, but the funding sources for the catch monitoring program, that whatever it is that's going to be implemented in this amendment, is unclear. We're not sure if the resources are available from NIMS, and if they're not, the committee has not discussed how to make those resources available. So that's an overview of where we are with catch monitoring. That was the second priority, and that really has consumed most of the committee's time since last November, December, with the exception of the ACL and AM provisions. The third issue for this amendment is management measures to address river herring bycatch. This is a work in progress. There has not been too much discussion at the committee level. The PDT did do a preliminary analysis of available observer data late last year, and we had a discussion with the committee at that time. But we stopped to focus on the ACL, AM, and catch monitoring priorities at the direction of the council. So the work, the preliminary analysis has begun, but the committee has not spent a lot of time discussing what kinds of alternatives for may be considered in this amendment. Since then, as you all know, we have seen that the ASMFC has requested emergency action by the Secretary of Commerce to monitor river herring bycatch, and not just in the herring fishery, but in all small mesh fisheries. So I'm, you know, just mention that as something everybody should be aware of. I'm not sure how that will affect the decisions that need to be made on this amendment. The next issue, measures to establish criteria for midwater trawl access to groundfish closed areas. This was added by the council in November of 2008 and identified as the fourth priority in February of 2009. Between November of 2008 and February of 2009, we managed to get a little bit of work done at the committee level, and the committee did propose one general alternative, which would establish provisions for 100% observer coverage on vessels that exceed the 1% bycatch threshold in the closed areas, and then penalties for a second offense. We haven't been able to revisit this because of the other priorities, so this is something that we need to discuss in more detail, and this is really the only alternative that the committee has been able to develop at this time. The committee did agree that the measures that the Herring Alliance proposed for access to closed areas would be discussed further when we revisit this issue relative to the measures in this amendment. Last issue is the measures to address interactions with the mackerel fishery. This is something that we sort of knocked off early on in the amendment development process. We actually got it done pretty early, like in the June through September period last year. So these measures are pretty well developed and ready to move forward for the most part. There are three alternatives under consideration to increase the possession limit for open access permit holders in areas 2 and 3 only. One option increases it to 25 tons. One option increases it to 25 tons only for vessels that also have a mackerel permit. And one option increases it to 10,000 pounds. These alternatives all sort of are intended to deal with catch on mackerel vessels that may not have limited access permits and may be restricted by the open access permit and the current 3-ton trip limit, which isn't really adequate for a vessel that may be fishing for mackerel and catching, encountering herring in much larger amounts than that. These alternatives do not address potential problems that would be associated with an early closure of the Area 2 fishery. And I just mentioned that because the Area 2 fishery did close this year, which means that there will be no available quota for the winter mackerel fishery this year. And there are no alternatives in the document to deal with that particular issue, just so you're aware. In terms of the timeline issues, there's obviously a lot of work that's gone into this amendment and obviously a lot more that needs to be done. We have got to stop and do specifications, and we need to start working on the specifications, like, right now. The stock assessment just occurred in the beginning of June. I haven't seen the final report. Hopefully it's available, and hopefully it will be available soon. I'm a little concerned that Steve mentioned this morning we may not be getting the full assessment document until much later, but we need to move forward and make the decisions for the specifications. We are scheduled to make the final decisions on the specifications in November of 2009, which is already sort of late, considering that they have to be implemented January 1st, but that's about the best we can do. The 2010 to 2012 specifications must include an ABC specification for all 3 years that comes from the SSC and must comply with the ACLAM requirements for 2011 and 2012. As I mentioned in my earlier presentation, the ACLAM provisions of the amendment need to be submitted no later than April or May of 2010 in order to meet the January 2001 implementation. The rest of the amendment, however, is still under development. So it's, you know, there needs to be some discussion of the timeline issues and how to prioritize and get all the work done, given that we're going to be doing specifications for pretty much the rest of this year. The catch monitoring alternatives are still under development. River herring measures are not yet developed, and the groundfish closed area access measures need more work. So that's all I have. That is the overview of where we are with the amendment.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Lori's correct. I didn't realize it's only been a year that we've been working on this. It does seem a lot longer. So I may have to take back my statement from yesterday. So anyway, with that, I have a committee motion. I think it's that Amendment 4 be split to address the ACLAM provisions only, and that the remaining measures, and examples are catch monitoring, river herring, bycatch, mackerel, and groundfish closed areas, be incorporated into the new Amendment 5, and that the time period is outlined in the draft straw man document dated February 3rd, 2009. Only the remainder of Amendment 4 work would be considered in Amendment 5. Committee motion.
Discussion on the committee motion. Lori.
In your binder, document number four is a series of timelines. And I've actually brought forward three timelines, and I just want to explain to you what the three timelines are here so that you understand where we are as you consider this motion. The first timeline is the first page, and it is the draft straw man dated February 3rd, 2009. This is the timeline that the committee considered when making this motion, and this is a proposed timeline for splitting the amendment. And what you see on the first page here is basically where we are now and then the specs process, which takes us through December of 2009. If you flip this page over on the back side, you see a proposed timeline for what would become Amendment 5. After the committee meeting and after taking a closer look at this timeline and after looking at our schedule for council meetings next year, I got very nervous and quickly realized that this timeline is really not very realistic. This timeline that's here on the first page has the council essentially, or the committee, picking up its work after the specifications process on all of the other elements of this amendment and having the council approve the range of alternatives in April. The April council meeting is like April 7th, which means that we need to have the work done like by mid-March, and that really gives us like less than 2.5 months to pick up everything in this amendment and finish it. So we're looking at maybe two committee meetings if we're lucky. And I just did not feel like that was really very realistic. And I think that if the council is going to consider splitting this amendment, it needs to do so with an understanding of what might be a more realistic timeline. So that's what the second timeline is. On the second page, it's labeled at the top, revised straw man based on Herring Committee recommendation to split Amendment 4. And what you see in this timeline on the back page is that the development of Amendment 5 obviously continues right after the specifications, but rather than approving the range of alternatives at the April council meeting, the council would do it at the June council meeting, which is late in June. It gives us more time. I think it's much more realistic if we want to actually get the work done at the committee level on this amendment. So I would encourage you to consider this motion, even though it refers to the first timeline dated February 3rd, I would recommend that you consider this motion based on the June 9th timeline, which I think is more realistic. And then, of course, the final timeline is on the last page, and this is the Amendment 4 timeline if we don't split the amendment and if we include everything in Amendment 4 and just keep working on it. It's essentially the same. We have to stop no matter what and do specs this year, and we pick up work on the amendment in January of next year. The problem with this timeline is that we seriously run the risk of not meeting our legal deadline for ACLs and AMs. Based on the timeline of not splitting, we would be submitting the amendment in early 2011, and NIMS would be implementing it as soon as possible. You know, given that it's a January 1 fishing year, my expectation is the amendment would be implemented January 1, 2012. That does not meet our requirement to have ACLs and AMs done in 2011. So that's the risk that you run if the amendment is not split. So hopefully that clarifies things. I'm sure it doesn't, but those, I think, are the options that you're facing.
Frank?
Yeah, based on that, I hate to be the one to make the motion, but I'm going to make a motion to amend the committee motion to change the timeline to the June 9th timeline instead of the February 3, 2009.
Is there a second? Seconded by Terry. Okay. Just so I'm clear, there's two timelines titled June 9th, and then there's one titled February 3rd.
Each page is a different timeline. The first page is the February 3rd timeline for splitting. The second page is the June 9th timeline for splitting. And the third page is the June 9th timeline for not splitting.
So this is the June 9th for splitting, obviously.
Yes.
Okay. Discussion on the motion to amend. Doug Grout. Not on the motion. Discussion on the motion to amend. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. One abstention. Motion to amend carries 14-1-1. Somebody didn't vote. Okay. On the motion, the main motion as amended, discussion. Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked this question of Gene at our committee meeting, and I just for the purposes of the full committee hearing this, my question is, outside of it being irresponsible for this council not meeting the legal deadline, I wanted to find out what the legal ramifications if we don't have ACLs and AMs in place would be. What are the consequences of that?
Gene?
Well, as I said at the committee meeting, you would be, we'd be in violation of the statutory requirement for getting it into place. And there's no specified consequence that's listed in the Magnuson Act if you don't do it. I mean, there's no automatic consequence. You run the risk of being sued by someone who wants to ensure that the statute is complied with. Of course, that takes a while to come to fruition, but that is a possibility. I think something I didn't mention before is that if the agency thinks that the council will not do something within a reasonable time, there are provisions in this, in the Magnuson Act that allow for the agency to initiate a secretarial amendment. I'm not saying that the agency would do that or has even thought about that, but that is an option that is specified in the statute.
Paul Howard. Mark Gibson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. At the committee meeting, there was some discussion about the request that ASMSC has made for emergency action. I think it was a letter from Vince O'Shea to Secretary Locke. We went fairly well high up the chain. That was a very strong position at ASMFC to do that, and we were concerned that support of this action would be inconsistent with that position that we've taken. I think some of us expressed the opinion that were there some indications that support was forthcoming, we might not support this motion to split at the full council level. So I guess I have a question for Bob Beal. Do we know if there has been a response to that letter?
No, we have not received any response, Mark, and haven't heard of any pending response either.
Could you call right now?
Secretary Locke?
Be helpful.
Okay.
Good. Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to support this motion with the understanding that the issues that will go into Amendment 5 are extremely important. I want to see those considered as soon as possible, and also with the understanding that looking at the timelines, that essentially we come out at the same place within a reasonable amount of time if, in fact, under Amendment 5, we can stick to that timeline. So those are the reasons that I would support it.
Mary Beth?
Just in follow-up to what Rip said, I said if you look at the revised timeline, bottom of page 2, and the updated not split, the submission date is the same. You know, there is no delay in these timelines. It's really a packaging issue and trying to get the ACLs move forward so that you meet that deadline. And then our dates of submission for in either scenario stay the same. So I think misunderstanding on some people's parts that this actually delays the amendment, and Lori's timeline indicates it does not.
Terry Stockwell.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The committee and I personally really agonized over this motion a couple of weeks ago, but Steve's report highlighting the complexity of the spec-setting process and Lori's comment that the the catch monitoring is way more complicated than it appears, and the loss of the PDT for essentially 6 months really highlighted to me that the necessity of doing this. We've got to have credibility and quality in our process and quality in our product on the other end. And to move forward by splitting it, moving forward with the ACLs and being compliant gives us a time to address the other issues, as other folks have said, that are more or less within the same timeline. I encouraged the committee a couple weeks ago. I will request today, probably with others, that the committee be given the clear guidance to move ahead and continue work through the summer as the PDT works on the spec process to fully develop the catch monitoring programs the best we can to address the river herring issues. And a question I guess I have for Pat is, have you had any correspondence with headquarters or the secretary about this letter that the commission sent? And do you have any guidance to us on how we should react to it?
Well, the letter is still under internal discussion. The question, of course, we're asking, which is the first question we always ask, is what's the emergency? And quite honestly, I'm not sure that was very well articulated. And I guess I have a question in return. What is it that the commission has done to address river herring bycatch by the states and in state waters? Because, of course, that's just as critical.
I don't know that we need to get into what they've done in state waters. If you feel it's necessary, go ahead, Terry. Dr. Pierce?
Well, this motion puts me in a difficult situation since Paul Diodati is chairman of the ASMFC Shad and River Herring Board. And a couple of meetings ago, he and other board members decided that it made sense for the board, the Shad and River Herring Board, to wait for the council to finish its work on the catch monitoring strategies, the catch monitoring program, to deal with the Shad and River Herring Board concerns about bycatch of Shad and River Herring in smallmouth fisheries, with, of course, the pier trout fishery for river herring being one of the notable fisheries where bycatch does occur. So they held off on moving forward with the development of a strategy to deal with this concern, feeling the council was going to address it in a timely fashion. And now splitting the amendment raises the question, is it really going to be addressed in a timely fashion? Because I suspect that if we do split, there will be slippage. And we'll find ourselves with, the next amendment, not on the schedule that has been described by Lori, who did a good job on this, obviously, but I suspect it'll just drag on and will be far beyond the anticipated date for implementation of this catch monitoring program. And with that said, I don't downplay the significance of the complexity of these issues, all these outstanding issues and questions that need to still be answered. They are, the list is long, and Lori has noted that. We don't know what the Secretary is going to do relative to the ASMFC request for emergency action to deal with this concern about bycatch monitoring as it relates to river herring bycatch and smallmouth fisheries. Pat's already made an important point regarding what's the emergency. She's going to seek further clarification on that. I'm going to assume that the Secretary is likely not going to take emergency action. I could be wrong, but that's what my assumption is going to be. Consequently, this motion takes on even more importance for me and for Paul Diodati. There's a tremendous irony here, that irony being that the first priority is ACLs, and AMs, understandably so. This was a council decision. It's a priority that I don't share. My first priority is catch monitoring, not the ACLs and AMs. But I understand why the council went with ACLs and AMs as the first priority, legal concerns being of great importance. But with sea herring, what we're proposing for ACLs and AMs is nothing profound. It's pretty much the way we're doing it now. So the rush to get this done doesn't seem to be that significant. It's or notable. It's nothing profound is going to happen. It's pretty much what we've been doing that has been very effective. And we're going to continue that. Therefore, it makes it awful hard for me to support this motion that would say, all right, let's just focus on the ACLs and the AMs. Let's get that job done, and let's set aside catch monitoring for potentially a much, much longer time than what's described in the revised timeline. So if this motion does pass, I suppose I'll have to advise, my director, Paul Diodati, and certainly Bobby will do the same, notwithstanding what happens with the Secretary of Commerce and the Secretary's reaction to the ASMFC request. I guess the Shad and River Herring Board is going to have to move forward on this issue as well, in an aggressive way, perhaps following what the council has outlined so far, perhaps not. I'm not sure where the board will go with this, but I know the board will be very disappointed with a vote to split this, since this is a very high priority issue for ASMFC, and it certainly is a high priority for this council as well. I'm concerned that if we don't have in a timely way this catch monitoring program in place, then we'll find ourselves in the not too distant future forced to, consistent with SSC concerns, take the ABC values they give us and drop them, decrease them, perhaps significantly, to account for management uncertainty. Because they made that point earlier on. If we don't have this catch monitoring, which is important to reduce uncertainty, then the management uncertainty element of this kicks in, and we'll find ourselves likely faced with much lower ACLs, for the sea herring fishery. So with all that said, I'll express my disappointment in the need to split the two amendments. I understand why, but I can't support the motion.
Paul Howard.
Larry, the ACL AM work, which is completed, would be submitted with the spec package. Is that correct? So.
It's submitted with the specs package, but as a separate package. It requires a separate NEPA document and everything.
Right.
Final decisions on both to be made in November.
Right. Okay.
Sally?
Thank you. I oppose the motion. We've already eliminated a major element of Amendment 4 when we decided not to proceed with sectors lapse. And now we're cutting out one of the kind of bottom line measures that's needed to be a part of this amendment. The letter, which I hope everybody has taken a look at, it's document 10, the first letter that's on top of that stack of correspondence on river herring. And I asked Bob Beal yesterday how often emergency action is requested, and he couldn't recall when the last time was, because it's such a rare event, understanding that the emergency needs to be understood and fully justified by NIMS in order to respond favorably to the request. Nonetheless, ASMFC doesn't do this every day, far from it. I've been looking at this motion again, as we did during the committee, and trying to figure out if there's a motion to amend, if there's, one thing that we could hold on to keep in Amendment 4 so that we don't entirely lose the momentum that we have in Amendment 4 and do something on monitoring. My inclination was to offer an amendment to strike river herring bycatch from the motion so that we're at least dealing with that. And then I listened to David Pierce, and it's compelling that if we're just doing river herring, that we're only getting a small portion of it. But perhaps if we do that, leave addressing river herring bycatch in Amendment 4, then we're dealing with one of the most pressing problems clearly identified by the states as something that needs to be addressed presently, and then unfortunately defer action on a more comprehensive catch monitoring system, which, you know, as David Pierce pointed out, the longer we delay a comprehensive catch monitoring system, the longer we're going to have to have a larger management buffer between ABC and ACL as a result. All that said, I'm going to go ahead and offer a motion to strike river herring bycatch, which would essentially retain the its Section 5, which is just one page on page 117, in Amendment 4.
Just so I'm clear before I ask for a second, you want to take river herring out of Amendment 5 and leave it in Amendment 4?
That's right.
Is there a second? Dr. Pierce, discussion on the motion to amend. Paul Howard.
Laurie and I met with Jake from our SSC, Kreitzer, and a postdoc student, Jamie, who's in the audience, about helping us with river herring, a postdoc student who's working on river herring as her postdoc project. And they're willing to work with us, and there's an awful lot of information we have to gather, you know, spatially, and we spoke, and we're very impressed with this woman and the amount of funding and everything to help us do this right and collect data and model it and figure out where the best areas are and how we could best address river herring, and that's going to take some time to do it right and meet federal standards. Now, I'm not anyway, we've got that gal on, that woman on board, and she's going to help us do the analysis we need and be part of the PDT, if that plays into your decision.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, through you to Pat, if the Secretary determined that there an emergency action was needed and that was done relatively quickly, how soon would it be before something got into position, and I'm just trying to think of the emergency action versus what we would be able to do through Amendment 4 and timing issues on that.
Well, as always, a difficult question to answer. It depends, for one thing, on whether or not the emergency was implemented through proposed final rulemaking or just final rulemaking. And, of course, it's a much higher bar. Even if you determine there's an emergency, it's still somewhat difficult to justify going directly to final rulemaking. And so I would say, best case scenario would be probably 2 to 3 months, and maybe even a more likely scenario would be closer to 4 or 5, maybe 6 months.
Gene?
There's also a provision in the Madison Act that we're under Section 402, which allows the council to request or the secretary to initiate standalone measures to collect information or to expand or establish an observer program that's not based on emergency rulemaking. That's one thing that was mentioned in our letter concerning the council's request to increase observer coverage with respect to haddock and regulated groundfish bycatch. There's additional authority for implementing new or beefed up observer programs. Of course, that all depends on resources available to the agency or other means that or other ways of justifying or paying for such increased observer coverage. And, you know, I think it's the ASMFC didn't mention this section. I'm not sure why or if it was based on a need to go faster than might otherwise be necessary. But that is another provision that's available to the council and independently the secretary for determining whether additional information is needed to develop sufficient management measures to address the river herring bycatch problem.
Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Given some of the, first of all, to Pat's concerns about the lack of information, I think the way I took it, it was in the ASMFC letter, I would encourage the Secretary to communicate those concerns, one about whether what is the actual emergency and what the states have taken, what measure the states have taken to reduce bycatch within state waters as soon as possible to the Commission so that we could respond to that. It may just be a matter of us developing a more detailed request, more with better justification for it. And the sooner that happens, the sooner we might be able to help provide you with the information justifying it. Secondly, I wanted to ask Lori, one of the things we discussed it at our committee meeting concerning splitting this amendment was the fact that potentially if we were just going to do ACLs and AMs in a split amendment, that it would not require a EIS, that it would only require an EA and would make things make this process of getting our ACLs and AMs in on time to meet the statute happen. My question is, with adding a motion which would include in Amendment 4 an issue to address the river herring bycatch, does that change what is going to be required here, and is that going to slow things down for Amendment 4 and the beginning of Amendment 5 and whatever's left?
Well, it's hard to say for sure one way or the other without knowing what the particular management measures may be to address river herring bycatch. Just related to that and to the whole timeline issue and this motion, the assumption was that if we move forward with Amendment 4 only including ACL-AM process, just the process, that would likely not trigger an EIS through significant impacts. Not to say that the outcome, which will be reflected in the specifications and the actual numbers and things, may be something entirely different. I'm not addressing whether or not an EIS would be necessary for the specifications package, but the process that would be established in Amendment 4 would likely not trigger an EIS. Adding river herring bycatch measures to the amendment would require further evaluation before we could determine whether or not an EIS would be triggered, and it would depend on what those bycatch measures would be. Related to that, however, is the fact that we have to stop and do specifications this year, and we're not getting out of that one way or the other, and that's where we're going to be focused between now and November. So we would have to – the ACL-AM process in the amendment is essentially done and ready for final decisions in November. We cannot get river herring bycatch measures done and ready for final decisions in November because we really, other than some work that may be occurring outside of the PDT, which we will greatly benefit from when we can get back to it, but you're not going to get analysis out of the PDT between now and November on river herring bycatch. Everybody's tied up with the specifications. So none of these timelines would apply to this motion. We would actually need to finish the specs, pick up the river herring bycatch measures, and reevaluate a timeline for Amendment 4 that would still allow us to get it submitted by May 2010 to meet the ACLAM requirements. And then once we submit Amendment 4, later next year, we would pick up catch monitoring and everything else in Amendment 5. So adding the river herring bycatch measure to this amendment reprioritizes the work for Amendment 4 and puts the river herring bycatch measures ahead of the catch monitoring program, recognizing that we still have work to do on the river herring measures. I'd have to go back and do another timeline.
Doug, another bite?
Yeah, this is, I was one of the people that on the committee that voted against splitting this amendment. But on further consideration, I voted against splitting the amendment because I felt it was very, very important that when we go forward with ACLs and AMs in this fishery, that we do have an improved catch monitoring program. I felt the two were linked together, and it would be disadvantageous to separate them. However, I also see our responsibility to meet what Congress mandated of us. And so at this point, I'll let the council know that I'm going to change my mind on this, and I am going to vote for splitting the amendment. And I'm very concerned that as much as I really would like to have something in there on river herring bycatch, that putting in that amendment to the motion will defeat the whole purpose of getting the ACLs and AMs in on time.
Jim Odlin?
Yeah, my question's if this amended motion stays in, are you actually talking about trying to develop, A, monitoring system to monitor river herring bycatch, and B, measures to address river herring bycatch by minimizing it? And if it's both of them, I mean, I think we're back to the same problem.
Sally?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly would be ideal, given what we understand about the timeline and the potential for an EIS being triggered. My thought was to do something that would be much simpler, whether that's something like what the council suggested to deal with haddock bycatch in closed area one, something where you kind of follow the hotspots of where the river herring are occurring, and we have some information on that, so you could, you know, draw a box around a certain area, a certain time of year, and if you want to go in there, then you have to have 100% monitoring. So something simple like that, as we tried to develop and suggested to the service to deal with haddock bycatch. So not comprehensive, but something that could be relatively simple for this first pass on catch monitoring just for river herring in Amendment 4, and then something more comprehensive, as Jim just described, in Amendment 5.
Everybody take a look at the board. Think about it over lunch. Be back in an hour.